back with another edition of the Purple and Bold podcast from the Daily News Record. I'm Shane Metlin here in our newsroom studio with Katie Harper once again. Spring sports really getting into full swing. Spring football definitely in full spring with the spring game kind of right around the corner at this point. Just a little over a week away. So we got plenty to talk about here in this episode. Let's start with, you know, maybe the surprise team on campus this year. As we continue to talk about how everybody's winning, if you're in purple and gold here this season, the fact that we're potentially talking NCAA tournament for baseball, that we're talking a top 25 RPI team, even with some disappointment to start conference play, this is still where Marlon Eikenberry's team is right now. I know you were out at the ballpark last night, saw them really take it to Richmond. The offense, the bats, they just continue to hum. Tell me what you saw from them in your most recent viewing, and let's just then dive into if this talk of NCAA tournament is legit.
Yeah, I think the pitching situation has been interesting, especially over the last couple of days. We kind of went into last night's game knowing that both Richmond and JMU were going to be – it was going to be a bullpen day for both of them, and I think JMU handled it much better than Richmond did. Obviously, when you look at the score and you see that JMU put up 14 runs, you kind of expect it. They actually didn't probably get as many hits as someone like Marlon Eikenberry would want. I think they finished the game with 9 hits, which is just shows, I mean, you were able to put up 14 runs and on only 9 hits. They took 13 walks. So they were seeing the ball really well. They were taking pitches when they needed to be taken, and they weren't making or trying to make too much out of nothing. And I think we're starting to see right now is that this team, and we've seen it all year, when this team goes down, they're never really out of it. They tend to do really, really well in the late innings of games. And what they really, I think, what's really held them back at times has been the pitching that comes later in games. They have some guys in the bullpen that maybe aren't getting as consistent outings as they like or whatnot, and you're seeing it kind of have them falter in those big game moments. And I think yesterday, with it being a bullpen game, there were a lot of guys who threw that have not been out on the mound in quite a while, and Marlon Eikenberry was really, really pleased with how they looked.
Yeah, when you look at the overall record now, looking as I scroll back to the top of the page, 20-12. They're 15-3 at home, which has been very impressive. They've got multiple, we'll dive into RPI and everything here in a minute. They got multiple what you call quality wins. Just 6-6 in conference play right now. I think, you know, you look at the schedule where they are, they lose the series on the road at Texas State. That one hurts. That one's probably maybe one they're lamenting at this point. Outside of that, you know, most of their losses are losses that I think, you know, you can deem acceptable. You know, a midweek game at Maryland. Maryland's up there, in that would have been a quality win if they could get that one on the road. They, you know, lose a couple to Coastal Carolina, although talk about games they lament. Where would they be right now if they close out that extra inning game 3 against Coastal Carolina, where they seem to have it? They seem to have it won a couple times, and couldn't pull that one out. And 3 losses to Arkansas to go with 1 victory, which, you know, as we get into the RPI discussion, we'll talk more about that victory. But for the most part, you know, you're not talking about very many bad losses. And now they've won 4 in a row, maybe getting it together as they get into, you know, the stretch time of conference play, can try to move up the conference standings, which technically shouldn't matter when it comes to your NCAA tournament, you know, bid hopes. The conference standings shouldn't matter too much as the overall record, but everybody's human. Everybody's going to look at a team, like, if they're finishing in the middle of the pack in the Sun Belt, it doesn't look as good as if you're more towards the top. Let's just talk a little bit about, you know, what they have in front of them with the opportunities here, getting ready for this weekend, where they're going to travel down to ODU. So more in-state play. They're undefeated in in-state games. They want to keep that up because going down to ODU, that's always going to be a big series. It's always going to be big for the rivalry. But frankly, when these two teams joined the Sun Belt, I think we figured they'd be in opposite positions as far as baseball right now. So just tell me what you're kind of expecting and looking for in this series this weekend.
This past weekend's sweep of Appalachian State was huge, I think, in kind of getting the momentum back in conference play after some of those quote-unquote heartbreaking games that they lost. So to get that sweep to then carry over into an in-state rivalry game that everybody kind of knows the history between JMU and Old Dominion across all sports. And so I think there's some confidence behind them right now heading into that ODU game, but it's also a series that if you really want to turn around your conference season so far, you need to win that series and possibly sweep it. I mean, right now, ODU is a 500 team. They're sitting at 16-16. They have a losing record in conference play at 5-7. So obviously that could technically switch over the weekend. But it's definitely a series that they want to go in and need to go in and win. And at the same time, it's not like JMU where their home record is insanely strong at 15-3. ODU's at 15-8. So they've taken some more losses at home. So it's not necessarily an environment that I think JMU should be super, super worried from. But I do think if their bullpen can hit when it need, or not hit literally, but if their bullpen can pitch well when they need it late in games, I think they're definitely a team that's built to beat Old Dominion.
Yeah, and you know, you talk about ODU, it being kind of a must-win series and a sweep would be nice. They're 500, but it's still also an opportunity for, you know, not a resume victory compared to some of the ones they have on their resume already, but you know, a top 60 team. You know, I think even if JMU goes down there and wins the series, you're still talking about top 75 type team. That's not nothing when it comes to like building your resume down the line. And I think just winning conference series is something that's going to be huge, because I do think that's something the committee looks at, is not just your overall record, but are you winning two or three most weekends? And I think that'll be big, since they haven't done that as consistently in conference play, even as they continue to find ways to get some of these wins that look really good. RPI right now, as we record this on a Thursday afternoon, number 23 in the country. You know, we talk about it's the year of the Dukes in the top 25, and they're not in the voting rankings. But like the softball team, or not softball, volleyball team in the fall, they never really cracked the top 25 votes, but they were up there in RPI because of their schedule all year long, and they end up getting an at-large bid to the NCAA tournament. Could we see the same thing from baseball when we kind of look at where they are right now? Let's talk about what gives them this resume. Obviously, they got off to a good start of the season, even though they were only 2-3 to start the season. Those two wins end up being ones that we're looking at right now as, hey, these are the quality wins on your resume. You go back and look at getting one on the road at Arkansas and then coming home and taking one from Virginia Tech.
And against Virginia Tech, I mean, I know it the Hokies closed it up and tied it late, but for a while it looked like JMU was in complete control of that game, and that's kind of what I'm pointing to with the bullpen at times kind of getting them in a bad place. But this is a team that I think the biggest thing for them right now is that they're in the Sun Belt. So that idea of having a high RPI can definitely help them now later in the season, more so than it could of when they were in the CAA, because they just weren't getting those quality games at the same consistency that they're getting them now. Like, the Sun Belt is one of the premier college baseball leagues, and I think JMU is starting to see that benefit them now that they've played in it longer, they've seen some of these opponents more often, and have kind of elevated their play to other Sun Belt teams.
Yeah, we do talk about you know, mid-major group of five as a category for JMU sports in a lot of things, but in baseball, it's not a mid-major league, and I think there's been even some debate about like if there is mid-major baseball, because there's a lot more balance across the sport. I think there are mid-major leagues, but the Sun Belt's not one of them. The Sun Belt is a top five, top six at worst baseball conference, and they're going to get multiple bids. And like you said, now they're in a position where having to play conference games down the stretch is not necessarily going to hurt you. Like we said, you know, ODU, another team in the middle of the pack that they're going to play this week, it's still a quality game when you look at RPI. And that's a much different experience for the baseball program than most of the teams on campus just when you get this far into the season.
Yeah, definitely. And I think it's definitely going to be an interesting one to see. I know a lot of people have kind of been floating it around that they've seen that probably 5-6 Sun Belt teams could possibly get a spot in a regional. And if that's the case, I don't think it's crazy to expect JMU to crack the top six in the Sun Belt if they can clean up some certain things and keep moving forward and build momentum instead of dropping maybe those 1-2 games that you're going to look at and be like, wow, I really want that one back.
Yeah, and to talk about, you know, the opportunities they have coming up later in the month, they do have another midweek game against Maryland. Maryland coming down here this time. That seems like that's going to be huge. Maryland is another, I don't have the RPI right in front of me, top 30-ish type team. I think if you end up splitting a season pair with them, that ends up with an opportunity to look very good. Also, another trip down to Virginia Tech. They've got some opportunities in front of them that really kind of control their own destiny at this point as far as trying to get into the NCAA tournament, which would be, you know, Jeff Boren had his retirement ceremony the other night. He's really on the way out the door. It seems like this has been like the longest retirement tour in a long time, just because all these things keep happening. But, you know, we keep saying, you know, it's the last big thing for Jeff Boren. If the baseball team gets into the NCAA tournament, then it's just like it's
mayhem.
It must have just been predestined that everything was going to go right for this guy in his last year.
So Maryland comes in at 39th in RPI, but then JMU baseball did just add a game against Georgetown a few weeks or earlier this week, and they're another floating around top 50 RPI. So they have some good games coming, and they're coming to Harrisonburg, and will put them in a position to obviously possibly win it with how good their home record has been.
Yeah. You know, moving on to some of the other spring sports as we kind of, you know, go around the dial. I talked to Reed Butler from the JMU softball team this week. They kind of took another tough series loss at Louisiana. Louisiana wins their 85th straight Sun Belt series. It's absolutely dominated this conference. And when JMU was probably good enough to compete with them, frankly, JMU was still the CAA. So, you know, not necessarily surprising to go down to Lafayette, get swept. But probably a little bit disappointing. But you look at the softball side of things. You know, I don't think we're going to get into a discussion of an at-large bid for this team this year. I think they're hoping to get back to that level at some point. They're still a little bit young. But right now they're 5-7 in the Sun Belt. Solid overall record. But you look at the standings, you look at who they have coming up. I think there is an opportunity for JMU to kind of play their way into the upper tier of the Sun Belt. There's a separation. There's Louisiana, and then there's everybody else, and then there's Texas State as a clear second best team in the conference. I think JMU, even at sitting at 5-7 right now, they've already played half their games against Louisiana and Texas State. There's a real opportunity for the softball team, I think, to climb maybe even as high as third before they get to Sun Belt tournament time.
I think this year has definitely been a year of learning for the program, and it's one that will benefit them, especially, you know, if it doesn't end the way they probably, every team wants to win, every team wants to win the tournament, and it probably won't end that way for them, obviously, but I think it will definitely help them go forward and find the building blocks to potentially get there the next year, year after. But I also think this is similar to baseball. This is a team that plays better at home. Substantially, if you look at the record, I think it's like 3-8 on the road and 12-3 at home. So it's definitely a team that once they get home and get playing, I think they'll probably find some more wins, and that could hopefully, like you say, probably propel them to a third, number three spot in the Sun Belt.
Yeah, the Sun Belt standings in softball are very bunched up right now. There's six teams within a couple games of each other. They're all going to start playing each other. You look at JMU, 3 at home against Marshall this weekend. Marshall sitting at 6-6. So you get a series win or even a sweep, you've moved up a spot or two just from that happening. And you look at who they have coming up, road trip to App State, but App State's not very good. They should be able to win some games there. They're going to be on the road for six straight after the series. But they're going to face kind of the bottom teams in the conference. I think the opportunity is really there. And I know there's some disappointment in kind of where softball is right now. They haven't been back to the NCAA tournament since making the run to the College World Series, which is – it's kind of – you know, there's a lot of factors that go into that. You know, some tragic factors, some, you know, just, hey, it's tough to rebuild. You're not always going to have – All-American players growing up in your backyard, frankly. Like, you know,
you can't always be like an Oklahoma or something. Yeah, it's going to take time to rebuild that. And like you said, there have just been some things that have happened that you couldn't have imagined it the last time they were in the World Series.
Yeah, and you know, there's things to keep in mind that in spring sports, we've talked about this before, you're getting commitments from kids early on in high school, you know, probably by their sophomore year, they're starting to commit. And so players who maybe started looking at JMU because of that College World Series run are only now getting into college and maybe getting some experience in college. We're talking about, you know, freshman and sophomore now who were the recruits based off of that run. And so they're still young. They're playing well, but it makes it a young team. And then, like I said before, let's go back and look at that team. The teams that were really good, that were making regionals and super regionals and then the World Series. You know, you had basically two of the best players in the entire country that grew up a county over and were not super highly recruited. But, I mean, there's a little bit of luck involved there that you happen to have Megan Good, Kate Gordon, and there are other players who are local that were also not All-American level but were very, very good players that helped build that program to what it is. You just don't get that in the Valley very often in the Harrisonburg area in many sports. And it happened to happen at softball at a time where they could grow, at a time before, like, frankly, UVA did not take softball seriously until the last couple of years. That changes the outlook for JMU some as far as recruiting and just trying to build something. Clemson didn't even have a softball team. Duke's got a new softball program. The ACC is taking softball much more seriously. JMU was kind of early to the game as far as like, hey, softball's something we want to win at and we're going to invest in it. There's just a lot more competition right now, both in the conference and in this region, as far as who you're trying to recruit and build a program against.
Yeah, and I think like going back to the players that they were able to recruit when you look at that College World Series run, like Odyssey Alexander's from middle of nowhere Virginia, so obviously like to find her, get her committed, and then have her turn into what she was during that World Series run, like you said, it is luck. And so I think with how young this team is, with how young some of the pitchers that people expect to be really, really good pitchers at the college level, it's going to take time. It's not, and especially when you're playing in a league with a team like Louisiana that just dominates year after year, I think it's just going to maybe take a little bit more time than what people were expecting originally, or not maybe expecting, but wanting originally, especially after the success that they had seen out of the program.
Yeah. Moving around the other spring sports, you mentioned earlier, lacrosse has a big game, you know, maybe arguably their biggest regular season game because it's a conference contest against, you know, really the only other team in the AAC that is on JMU's level. And they go down to Florida. Those teams split last year, JMU winning the regular season, Florida winning in the conference tournament. A big one for the Dukes, after they took a couple losses. They're still doing really well, still ranked 14th in the country. But I think this is a big one as far as like if you want to be guaranteed to host NCAA tournament games, get some favorable seating there. Like this is going to be a huge contest for the JMU lacrosse team.
They're kind of towing the line right now of if they're going to host or not. They need some wins, and they need them to come at kind of more consistent. After, obviously, the start to the season they had, that it got them up to number two in the country, the losses have been a little bit more frequent. And I know this Florida game, it's one that a lot of these players who were starters last year, this is a team that left a bad taste in their mouth last year. They're not thrilled with the fact that they lost the conference tournament to them, and it's definitely something that they want to rebound from and try and get a win at. And I know after the game last weekend, they were talking about it's going to be a little bit interesting. I think it's stayed pretty cool up here in Harrisonburg for quite a while, so they're going down to Florida playing in the heat for maybe the first time all year. So it's definitely going to be a close one probably, and one to really, really follow. But I think they're heading in there with some question marks right now, especially when it comes to defense and in goal. You saw Caitlin Bowden, who had started pretty much all year and had been pretty good all year. I know she's only a sophomore, so she's young, but she got pulled in the game on Saturday over the weekend against Temple. She did eventually come back in, but there was moments of uncertainty where Shelly Clays needed to take her out and kind of just calm her down, have her watch some film and see what maybe was going wrong for her. So I definitely think this game against Florida, it's going to test them, and it's going to test them pretty early.
Yeah, it is interesting that JMU tends to do that more than I think other teams do, as far as pulling the goalie but then putting her back in. A lot of times you'll see the goalie gets pulled, and every goalie will have one of those games where they're just not seeing the ball, or you know, something's not going right, the defense isn't slowing anything down in front of them, and they just got to come out. And it happens to the best of them, but a lot of times that's they're done for the day. JMU, I think, does it a little bit more often, where they do actually, like, hey, you're just going to take a break and get back out there. But they are less experienced in goal than they have been for the majority of this great run they've been on, you know, since going back to the national championship in 2018. You know, Molly Dougherty at that point was, you know, a redshirt freshman and young, but, you know, exceptional, had an unbelievable season that year. But, you know, really since then they've had either an All-American or a very, very experienced player in goal at all times since then. So it is different. They're younger there. They're less experienced on defense. And it does seem to have caught up to them a little bit here in recent weeks.
Well, it's also interesting, too, because I think with their struggles on defense, it's not even necessarily their young players that are struggling. Ava Bleckley is a freshman, and she's put herself in a position to potentially get some looks to be an All-American. She has been unreal on defense for them. But there's been some inconsistency from the Piracino twins and from Nicole Marshall, which those are players that you expect to really be kind of your lockdown defenders with how long that they've been at the college level. But I think once, if they can get their defense clicking again the way it was early in the season, I think there will be less things to worry about. And I think the same goes for Bowden and Nett. There were moments this season where she needed to make a big stop, and she did. Thinking about like the UConn game, she made two stops right at the end of the game that kept JMU in the win column for that one. So I think as time comes for someone like Bowden, I think the experience will help her get better and probably help her get her save percentage up. And as long as the defense can maybe find that early season success that people were thinking would come later, I think they'll get better, and I think they will help them climb the standings once again.
Yeah. Shifting gears over towards Bridgeforth Stadium, been out there for some spring football and gotten sort of the first look at Dylan Morris, and you got to talk to Dylan Morris. I think, you know, that a lot of people dove into that article, loved hearing what he had to say. Guess give me your overall impressions of now both seeing him play and kind of getting a sense of what he brings as a leader and a person to this team as presumably the new starting quarterback for the Dukes.
Yeah, obviously, Coach Chesney, I don't think, is anywhere close to technically saying that Dylan Morris is the starting quarterback. But as it was brought up the other day in practice before we got to talk to him, it was about the first time in, I think, like 7 years that a quarterback had been made available at JMU spring practices. The last time there was a quarterback available, it was Brian Shore, and it was after the national championship run. So he was already an established quarterback. So it's been a while. And so getting to talk to him and watch him in practice, you can see whether it's his size and kind of you can see how long he's been at the college level with the way he plays. And I know it was something back in February. Bob Chesney had said before they had even started spring practices of like, this is a kid who's sitting in the front of meeting rooms and he's taking notes, he's engaged, and he's already seeming to step up into that leadership role of leading by example. And then when you watch him on the field, you see it in the way he throws and in the way he connects with his players. And I know the same day or the other day we talked to Taji Hudson, who's one of the few returning wide receivers, and he even said it caught him off guard how fast the chemistry clicked and was built between him and Dylan Morris. And I think just talking to him too, he's someone who believes in what this new coaching staff is trying to implement. He didn't get a visit Harrisonburg before he committed, but he had phone calls with Dean Kennedy, and he was like, you know what, this is an offensive coordinator and a quarterback's coach that I think can help me grow and help put me in a position to win and do it well.
Yeah, and, you know, funny that you mentioned the quarterback availability. It definitely is a different scenario, and it seems like every time we sit down, we talk about the differences between Chesney and Kurt Cignetti, and that's definitely one of them. I think sometimes it almost felt like it became a game for Cignetti to see how long he could wait to make the quarterback available to the media. Like, just maybe it was one thing he was having a little bit of fun with. But, you know, I think it probably is even important for Chesney at this point to kind of be able to put a guy he thinks is going to be a strong leader out there to start making his impression on this program, on this fan base. Because you see it, you know, you mentioned before we started recording, you mentioned Jacob Dobbs and just the kind of impression that he makes on people. Another guy who's kind of been front and center in all this, even though he's brand new to the program. And previously, I think there was always some hesitancy to put somebody who is new to the program out in front, even if they play quarterback, even if they are the leader on the defense. So I think that's just maybe a little bit different strategy as far as helping people get excited about this team as the spring game is right around the corner. And it'll be the first look a lot of people get at what's changed at JMU and in the football program.
Yeah, kind of circling back to Jacob Dobbs, I know there had been a lot of talk about him after his commitment to JMU and kind of what he could bring. I know Chesney, after the second signing day back in February, Chesney said, man, this is a guy you want on your team. Like, this is a player every coach would want. And for a long time, we're sitting there as media members thinking, okay, Chesney obviously thinks highly of a guy that he recruited out of high school and has had on his team for the last several years. But now, having had a conversation with Jacob Dobbs and having watched him in practice, it is crystal clear what he brings to a team. And honestly, I think sometimes it's understated how people have described him, because even today at practice, they run between drills and between parts of the field that they're at, and you look up and Jacob Dobbs is in like almost like a cartoon level sprint across the field. It's a kid, he loves football practice. It's the best time of his day. He made it really clear that it should be the best time of everybody's day, and he gets disappointed when practice ends. So this is a kid that you want on your football team, and I've been joking around that whenever his football career ends, whether it's sooner or later, I think within 2 minutes of it ending, he's going to be a football coach, and it's probably going to be on Bob Chesney's staff because of how much he loves the game and how much he's willing to work to improve it.
Yeah, and it'll be interesting to see, I guess, how long that takes, because, you know, I guess one of the other things I was going to bring up is April is always, you know, kind of NFL draft season to talk about that. And, you know, frankly, it's interesting to look at this year's draft class, and it's Chesney's Holy Cross guys are the ones that we're interested in looking at, because it's not a huge JMU presence as far as guys who are probably going to make it into the NFL. But Holy Cross has looked very good in the combine and everything else. And you wonder if Dobbs might be, you know, one of the next guys that Chesney recruited to that level that ends up playing some pro ball for a while.
Yeah, definitely. And I think what's important to note about some of those Holy Cross guys, especially this year, is a guy like Jalen Coker, who's a star wide receiver for Chesney. He's been down in Harrisonburg. He was down over the weekend, and I think for Chesney, he's really wanted to keep some of these guys, whether it be from Holy Cross or from JMU, that are now looking to enter the NFL draft. He wants them around this current team. Jalen Green has been down on campus working out pretty much every day. Same with Chroma. These are guys that Bob Chesney wants around the program because he wants these current players to look and see, like, this is what I need to do to potentially be in that position to get drafted. He wants them to see the work ethic that they bring and how much they love football and to see what football can potentially take them to. So I think it's, and he said it today on the Sun Belt coaches call about Jalen Green, that to see a, potentially see a guy like him get drafted could mean everything for this JMU program, whether it be for the players who are currently on the team to see it, or even in the recruitment of being like, hey, you want to go to the NFL? Well, look, this program just produced this guy that made it there.
Yeah. Well, I think that'll just about do it for us this week on the Purple and Bold podcast. We will next week get to a little bit of a preview of this actual spring game, and then we'll record something from the spring game, talk about what we see from the Dukes there. We'll also continue to dive into spring sports as they all hit kind of the crunch time and look for postseason runs as what's been a remarkable 2023-24 school year at JMU continues, and you know, may see even a couple more possible NCAA runs. But in the meantime, thank you for listening to the Purple and Bold podcast. I'm Shane Metlin. Here again, Katie Harper, and thanks for tuning in.